Welcome to Belt Loaded, the officially unofficial podcast of Expanse on Amazon. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
It's official now. It's no longer a sci-fi show. It's an Amazon show. We're here to do a season three wrap-up. Aaron, you were out of town last week, so Levi and I covered the second half of the finale. I just kind of wanted to start with what you thought of it.
I thought it was really good. The thought I had in my mind while I was watching it most was what I feel like that this felt rushed if I wasn't aware of how much material that they were having to plow through from the books. Because I did feel in the last two episodes ever so slightly some moments that were hustled along. But, you know, fitting a book and a half into a 13-episode season is kind of a feat. And the basics of the plot was awesome. And then the way they left the board set at the end, like, if you had asked me, I would have never predicted that all the Stargates would have opened up at the end, giving humanity potential gateway to, what was it, 1,600 systems?
1,300
yeah. systems?
Uh-huh.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
And Holden counted each and every one. He went to all the rings. He said, okay, this is one.
Yeah.
He had a touch of meat,
yeah.
Each of them.
I thought there was a little, like, maybe the suspect counting, but, like, I imagine, you know, it's not just a single, like our system doesn't contain a single world worth human habitation. There's, like, that's how many, I guess, worlds there are.
Yeah.
But I thought that's a really cool idea, and it really flips the geopolitical, you know, situation on its head, because now the Belters have asserted control, whether they can win it or not, and whether there will be a war over it. They've asserted control over the gate. And as Holden identified, it's going to be a massive gold rush and lots of blood. It's interesting because it's not like a Stargate, right, where you walk through it and you're instantly where you need to go. Because if these are anything like the other ring system or the one ring system we know, it's going to be a decent amount of travel. Like, this isn't going to magically wave all of the problems of space travel away. It's crazy to the extent, like, what is the proto-molecule's role going to be going forward? Because it literally just seems like it's a door, plot-wise, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It kicked open, you know, not even just a lot of physical doors, but a lot of plot doors, too. I'm super excited to see what the future of all of this is going to be. I mean, it seems to me like the proto-molecule's role going forward is going to be that of detective still, you know? I mean, Miller's still going to be out there hitching a ride with Holden, trying to figure out what happened to whatever race or whatever kind of being built these gates.
Because, I mean, I think that's the note of alarm at the end of this. Not only is the politics just completely changed and it's going to be a lot of, like, strife over that, but, you know, this technology is far beyond anything we can understand, and it was destroyed at some point, we think. And the fact that they're, like, rebooting the show is kind of like a mystery so that, you know, Holden and Miller can figure out what exactly happened to them, and it's like a murder investigation, right? But the thing is like, if you find the killer, what are you going to do? Bring it to justice? Because it erased a civilization that you can't even comprehend, so...
Right. Tread lightly.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, but on the other hand, they got a huge infusion of this new technology. That's going to be interesting and cool. Bobby has remutinied, I guess, and is with the Rocinati. That was cool.
Yep.
I liked how there wasn't any real villains. Like, I enjoyed your and Levi's take that, like, everyone doing something in the finale felt like it had a point to it. And, like, you know, I was even arguing myself. It's like, you know, if I'm not in Miller's inner circle and he starts ranting and raving and talking to nothing and you're watching this on a view screen, do you try to do the, like, it seems like if you destroy the gate, then it's going to contain the station, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I do agree that there were a couple of moments that felt rushed, and I really wish there were some things that they did in the book that I think they did better, but maybe only because they had more time to do them.
Right.
Or maybe because I'm more familiar with them. But
yeah.
I think for the most part, they did a remarkable job packing a book and a half into one season of a television show that historically has done one book and then half a book.
Right.
You know, like
right.
They were on the opposite trajectory for the first two seasons.
Right.
And here they really just ramped it up. And I thought they did a great job with that. And they did a great job keeping me invested in everyone in this show, not just the heroes, not just the four people who I'm supposed to be, you know, in love with throughout the show, but the people around them, Drummer, Ashford, like,
oh, when they engineered a situation where Drummer is going to take herself out with grenades, like, I was like emotionally preparing to grapple with like a Drummer dying, and it was shaping up to be a moment, and then Naomi Colcox fucking, you know, Harari with the elevator in his Martian armor, and it was a really, like, it didn't feel cheap because, like, I did believe in that moment that she might die. And there's certainly been people that died this year that I like. Souther and Cotillard and, you know, I could probably list a few others if I thought about it more. But, like, the show is not afraid to do that. And, like, I'm not, like, I was preparing a couple episodes ago to say goodbye to Alex or Amos when the massive decel event. So it's got a very similar Game of Thrones hook in that it does feel like anybody could die at any time, which makes everything much more, you know, much more dramatic
and
effective.
Yeah, I agree. It, you know, it has that Game of Thrones thing going for it.
Right.
But also, like, it's not even just that, you know, they can kill side characters and those are kind of expendable. It doesn't really feel like anybody's expendable in this universe. And therefore, when they do kill side characters, it makes an impact. Like, if Ashford were to die, it's remarkable what they've done with Ashford in six episodes.
Yes.
Because don't forget, Ashford was introduced to us after the time jump halfway through this season.
Yeah.
And in six episodes, he's become one of my favorite characters. I mean, you know, it's hard to say one of my favorite characters in this show because everybody is.
Yeah, like
they're just so well depicted characters.
Anyone that gets a line of dialogue is I have affection for.
Except and Diogo. You hate
except
Diogo.
I do hate him. He's just like, if there's a villain this season, it's him.
Yeah.
Because he's just.
That's fair.
I don't know if he's even a bad guy, but he's working for people that I don't think have humanity's best interest at heart. And I don't feel that way about Ashford. Like, I felt Ashford was he's obviously the antagonist in this episode, but he is not for evil reasons. I mean, maybe you could say that there's a selfish desire to redeem his old piratical ways in some kind of last-minute blaze of glory that no one will even know about, so how bad can it be? But like, it's still I find myself, if I wasn't in Miller's inner circle, I think I'd be on board for blasting the ring and sealing ourselves in here and dealing the consequences, because otherwise you know, the ring station was but that's where I get, like, you know, that my minor criticisms of the things being rushed is I did feel like in the last three episodes the humans weren't necessarily acting rationally. Like, they just saw what happened when a Marine pulls a grenade on the station, so they nuke a reactor. And it's like that stuff where I felt like the writers were kind of like goosing things along unnecessarily.
Sure, yeah.
But it wasn't nearly a fatal problem. And I felt like the Drummer and Ashford's relationship was really accelerated and condensed, but it worked. So, and, you know, Jesus, what does even season four even look like? This show is still expanding as its title. I guess, is that what the Expanse refers to? The fact that humans' horizons are being expanded?
Maybe. Into...
I always thought it referred to the void, that, itself.
It's just the expanse, the stuff that's out there.
Right, but this could be like, you know, humanity's, this is like the fucking monolith from 2001 coming to the monkeys and giving you Stargate technology.
Yeah, this could springboard us into something entirely new.
Right.
Season three is weird, too, because you look back at like season one and season two, and they had very clear through lines for the entire season. This season is split into two parts, two very distinctive
and
parts.
It feels
because
that way,
you know, you talk about there being no villains. Well, there were definitely, absolutely villains in the first half of this season.
Certainly,
Aaron Wright is a villain. Well, potentially, I would say he's very close to a villain. Mao, a
I'd
villain.
Say he's a villain, and Mao, he's certainly
a villain.
Mustache twirling, if he had one.
Yeah,
although
Dr. Strickland definitely a villain.
But even then, like even you know, Jean-Pierre, he had depth to him. Like, he wasn't, like, yeah. I think at the end he was doing what he thought was right for humanity. Like, we have to understand the protomolecule. If I have to grind a few children to dust to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's Thanos, right? Like,
yeah.
Of course, Thanos is a villain. Right. Yes, he has justifications for what he's doing, but it doesn't make him not evil.
Right.
So, yeah, I think Jules Pierre-Mal, definitely a villain. So, it's interesting that the second half didn't really have what I would view as solid villains. And that's not to take away from it. That's not a bad thing.
Right. I mean, I guess the villain or the primary antagonist was the station itself.
Yeah.
It was something that, like, you know, Miller and Holden and Ashford and everybody was kind of lined up against. Another thing I want to touch on in your guys' finale podcast is who wins in a fight between Amos and Bobby.
Okay. Yeah.
Are we talking about, like, does Amos get a power suit? Does Bobby fight without her power suit? Because if Bobby has her power suit, it's all over, Amos doesn't.
Yeah, Bobby gets her power suit, Amos doesn't, it's over.
Then, yeah, she just rips his ass in half, literally, like a phone book.
Mm-hmm.
If it's on equal footing, I don't know, because Bobby certainly has, as Levi pointed out, the military training, but as you pointed out, Amos has got the sheer tenacity and the lack of hesitation. Like, I could see Bobby, hesitate. Although, I don't know why I say that, because she was the first one to fucking try to blow away Holden.
That's true.
And she's got to have much more of a connection to Holden than she does to Amos. So maybe we're projecting on something Bobby that's not really in evidence.
Yeah.
I guess I would go with Bobby.
I think what would happen is the fight would start and then Bobby would mutiny and just leave the scene. go to another ship,
this
quit
is
her
a
job.
Hard-boiled choice. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to be a radar tech on the behemoth.
It is becoming a little bit of a joke. This certainly has to be the last time, right? Bobby can't go back.
I feel like there is another symptom of the rush is that the poor Martians just really come across poorly this half of the season. Like, they seem designed in a laboratory to split a wedge between Bobby's loyalty to Mars and her you know, loyalty to the greater cause that she sees.
Yeah.
And that was unfortunate. But again, you know, do you think one of the goals was to provide, like, an ending to the series? Like, if they didn't get another season, it's not exactly wrapped up, but, like, the protomolecule crisis in the Sol system, this is the story, and it was told. And now you could have spinoffs, you could have all kinds of, like, maybe they're thinking, like, well, maybe we'll get a chance to tell some movies in this new story, this new universe or something, like, go, like, a Firefly route. But it did feel like it could have been the end of the series if it had to be.
Yeah, with just the open question of, like, what destroyed the civilization that created the ring.
Right. And what would humanity do next? And, you know, there's lots of, like, unfinished business, but the business that was started at the beginning of the series felt like it largely came to a conclusion. And now, and then I saw that one of the showrunners on Twitter after the finale says, okay, so that's it. That's done with the prologue. And I kind of can see that like, everything was building up to essentially this Stargate business, and now they can tell the real story.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the, you know, the traditional three-act structure, we're one-third of the way through the books. So this would be the end of Act 1, where they've set up the story.
Yeah.
Now it's time to go explore it. Things are going to get worse from here.
Yeah.
Until Book 6, and then the last three books will be resolution.
I wonder if we're supposed to understand something important with humanity's happened here, because, you know, contra, like, Westworld, which has this very dour, pessimistic view of civilization, I feel like Expanse has that too, but at the end where Miller or Holden was like, can we just for once try something, like, not meet the unknown with violence? And, you know, regardless of what happens on the Behemoth, the rest of the starships, like the rest of the fleet, was willing to give that a try, and I wonder if that says something positive. Or the other recurrent thing is, as humanity expands, new prejudices and new hatreds and animosities replace the old ones, but we're always looking for the us versus them.
Yeah, we found a new them.
And now that there's 1,600 worlds that humanity can further to fracture upon, is that going to be a unified humanity stepping forth, or is it going to be the same old bitter rivalries now just fractured 10 to 100 times fold?
Yeah. Yeah, it is weird. We both simultaneously did and didn't find a new them, because there's a protomolecule, which they now understand, you know, is essentially a tool of a larger civilization that got wiped out. So, you know, there was a them there at some point, but now there's no longer a them, so we'll need to find a new them.
There's the unknown them that seems to be, like, you know, the true threat in the world. And I'm kind of interested in seeing what that turns out to be, because nothing, like, it seems like anything they could take, it's kind of like the Borg were this existential threat where, like, you could barely survive if everything pulled together. But the problem with that is, you know, you send Voyager to the Delta Quadrant, and then suddenly Janeway just, you know, beating the Borg like a drum with a single starship. And the Expanse has a problem where anything that could eat the protomolecules builder's lunch is going to absolutely wipe the floor with humanity. So either humanity has to take a big evolutionary step up, or they're going to have to nerf the great other that's out there destroying civilizations. And
yeah,
that's a tough, I mean, but I have an enormous amount of faith in the way they're running the show. Mm-hmm. And now that they've got, like, what it seems to me, a lot of, like, cultural and budgetary problems fixed. Like, I don't think Amazon is going to be nickeling and diming them. I don't think they're going to, you know, demand any particular thing. Not that I'm saying sci-fi did, but, like, they also, like, I won't have to hear any more of this, you know, get out of my face and forget you. And, like, they can actually tell a truly mature adult story. I'm excited.
Okay. Cool. I guess I don't have a lot more to talk about. We pretty much covering the finale. We talked a lot about, you know, where we hope this would go and stuff like that at the very end of that last podcast. I do have a lot of feedback, though.
Okay, cool.
If you want to do that.
Do we want to, before, I'm wondering if Anna becomes, does she continue to be a big part of the show going forward? I know this is, I'm relishing the one opportunity we can be in kind of even footing, because, you know, we are at the exact same place that the book three left, right? Mm-hmm. So what would your thoughts be? Does Anna have a role going forward, or was she just, she's kind of like the bridge between the two halves of the season, right?
I feel like anybody who has a role going forward needs to be closer to like Holden or Avrasarala, or
that,
like,
thing she's got with Amos is, I'm not even sure I like it.
It's interesting, but, like, she's got a fucking family to go back to. Do you want her to be Alex?
No, that's my big problem with it. But, like, I mean, maybe she's just going to be another Prax where, hey, I was hanging with Amos for half a season and taught him a moral lesson about the value of human life.
Right, and maybe he needs a series of those people in his life, you know, to change his mind about stuff. But
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really see her being a huge part because she's got places to go.
Right.
But
she can
help.
Also be, like, because they keep on showing Avasarala, like, that final scene of her contemplating all these gates and stuff. Like, she's not a cuddly figure. She is not what I would call a righteous figure. I think she wants to protect humanity, and she wants, but we can see how that desire can be subverted in, like, Ashford wanting to destroy something, and which would lead to the deaths, I guess, of everybody in the solar system.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, like, where are you on trusting Miller? Because I'm somehow wondering, like, if maybe Miller didn't engineer some of this behind the scenes to get what he wants. Like,
sure.
Like, he's making it seem like, oh, man, my hands are tied here with the station. But maybe he was escalating things on that end to force the humans to do something that he wanted. Like, maybe they could have destroyed the ring gate and that would have been it. But that's not what he wants. He wants to solve the fucking mystery.
Yeah. No, I don't think that whatever Miller is now has any concern for us as human beings. All it wants is to solve the mystery of its own destruction.
But there is a lot of Miller still left in there. And I get the other question I have is, what am I to make of, like, so Miller is hitching a ride not just on the Rocinante, but inside Miller. And is it connected to the blue goo that's still under those deck plates?
I don't think so, because Holden was off the Rossi when he was seeing Miller for the
but he was
the
in
last
the gate.
Several times.
He was in the gate, yeah, yeah. Which they made it clear that like really boosts the transmission on it. I just don't – that's the one big question I have is, like, what was the significance of that hunk of protomolecule? Was that – I kept on thinking they'd make it explicit that that's what let Miller kind of get his foothold in, but they didn't really, and maybe that's – maybe that's a symptom of the streamlined approach in writing. Because, like, even I think it was you pointed out that, like, in the final episode, they never really explain why Ashford was hell-bent on and using the laser. Like, why not shut down the engines just to see what happens? Mm-hmm. Like, I think the expanse of it was running, like, you know, and it's old efficient self and not, like, trying to overburn or do a high gravity burn to get to like they would be there a scene where like if we scram the engine it'll take a full day and we have hours, like,
right,
there's stuff little sloppy Joe things that could have been tightened down that would have but also maybe I don't know they're trying to leave some things ambiguous about people's motivations because I don't know what plot. You know, I imagine Ashford's still going to be important and Drummer's still going to be important and that Dawes and Johnson will be important going forward. But I don't know. Maybe they didn't want to play their hand about that. They didn't want to make it seem like Ashford is forced to do something, that this is more of a statement on humanity and the choices they make. Mm-hmm. Because if you're forced to do something, you can't really make a moral judgment on it. You just had to do it.
Right.
You know?
Whereas this, you can kind of read into, you know, what was his motivation for doing that? Was it pride? Was it some sense of forgiveness that was driving him? Like, what was it?
It does seem like it maybe both of those things because he didn't, you know, in that last scene of Drummer, like, coming up to him as he's crippled with
he doesn't look like he's having a good time.
No, with the drink, like, and trying to make amends, like, man, I just don't know if Captain XO relationship can go forward between them. And I thought, like, I was genuinely shocked that, I guess, Ashford was like, no, I am the captain. You're not the captain anymore.
I was too, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's another little rush. I felt like there needed to be something where he was convinced that she just was under the spell of Holden or whatever, but
yeah, they left that all somewhat ambiguous though, like to the point where I think they walked that perfect line between is this in fact a mutiny, because they were both like he said, look, I want her to come see me, right? Uh-huh. Like, he didn't say I'm the captain now and you have to obey me over her. He just told people what to do because she was out of communication, and then they both went their separate ways and did their own things.
Right.
Granted, Ashford sent people to go bring her to the bridge, and I don't think they would have brought her to the bridge. I think they would have killed her.
Right.
They walked like this weird fine line between mutiny or not mutiny in that final episode.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I do feel like they didn't want to fully commit a character. They wanted to keep everything kind of shades of hero and gray, to maybe do something with those characters in the future. I don't know.
And they would know what they were going to do with them, right, already.
Yeah.
So maybe they couldn't push
that
all the way into
me. But I don't know that that's true. I don't know that, like...
Well, they've got four more books that have been written.
Right, and then, like, what, two more that haven't?
Yeah.
So I'm, like, saying, like, but there's been so many differences and condensations that, like, maybe they're not sure that they need to preserve as many possibilities alive, so when they get in the writer's room and they're talking about how they can cut down book four or maybe fit half of book five in there, like, they can be like, well, we did leave an open question whether Ashford is... I'm just saying, like, it just seems like it's from their story, even though they know where they're going in a way that, like, I don't even think is true of the Game of Thrones showrunners. Like, you know, they certainly know where this is going, and by preserving some ambiguity, they give them some flexibility to streamline things to get there more directly.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Nope.
I got a little spoiled, not spoiled, but this is that because I was like, after, you know, I felt like, oh, I'll just do some deep dives in some of these threads because, like, there's not going to be no spoilers. But I guess that, like, you're in the book, Ashford kind of goes crazy.
Yes, I would label it as that a little bit.
Right. Like, and I think
he's provoked by by there's a lot of stuff provoking him.
Yeah,
to say that.
But I also wonder if they were trying to suggest like I'm looking for evidence of like what the authors are doing as far as like changing characters and why. And I think that it looked like that maybe even late in the season they were still hinting with the idea maybe he'll just be this will be a irrational thing because they had the suicide on board the prince and they had like Alex acting paranoid and irrational, and I felt like they were setting, but then they just decided, nah, let's not do that. And I don't like how late in the season did that happen, like, or were some of those, because I saw that in Game of Thrones sometimes, there'd just be like a little, a grace note that a character would get that would not make sense unless you were a book reader, and it's kind of like, you know, the showrunner, the show only watchers don't pick it up, but the book readers do, and it's like a nod to them. Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, I wonder if some of that stuff
Yeah. But, like, nothing that I would label as something that detracted from the show story.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just fascinated on how they're adapting it, honestly.
Yeah, I do think that the stuff they were doing with people acting irrationally and the suicide and stuff like that was definitely there to show what an epic event this is, right?
Right.
How this changes everything.
How much strain it puts on people, yeah.
Yeah, and I think ultimately that they didn't do that kind of thing with Ashford says more about Ashford than it does the writers. I think Ashford is a character who is resilient in the face of those types of, you know, I don't think he's acting irrationally. I think he's acting rationally, but maybe slightly in a slightly misguided way. So I think he's better able to cope. Like, all of the command staff seems better able to cope with this than just the run-of-the-mill,
right?
You know, civilian, for lack of a better term.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Maybe they were doing that to sort of contrast those two
Classes
types
of people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else, or should we get to feedback?
Let's get the feedback.
All right, we start off with Sophia, who says, when you do the wrap-up podcast, would you consider sectioning off the book show comparisons to a separate part? Maybe I'm in a minority, but as a non-book reader, I prefer not to know too much about the book. Occasional tidbits are all right. I like the level you're keeping it, but I'm trying to think of the show as its own thing. Not that I will ever be a true Unsullied. I've learned way too much from the interviews with Ty and Daniel on the turn. Yeah, dude, if you don't want things that I kind of view as spoilers, don't go listen to the churn.
He gives
you some great insights, but I think they're like one step ahead of the show usually.
It's so disappointing because I really want to listen to that podcast. Honestly, I want to throw my hat in the ring for the Amazon version of that podcast. Like, I think Ty and Dan, if you're familiar with our coverage at all.
Oh, yeah.
Because my understanding, the churn is kind of like a sci-fi, like it's ran by sci-fi employees. It's a sci-fi. Yeah.
I mean, Sci-Fi Wire, so it's like a division of sci-fi, but yeah.
I wonder if they'll keep doing... I just can't see... It seems like sci-fi, for better or worse, wants to wash their hands of this property. So, like, I would like Bald Move, the Belt to Loda podcast, to be the new churn, and I will spoil the shit out of myself, and or maybe I can be the editor, like, when Ty and Dan get too loose with their lips, I can be like, I don't know that. The fuck are they talking about? Anyway, yeah
I think
really...
all of these questions, you know, we have, or these speculations on what the writers are thinking. Are they saving characters? Are they making sure that everyone's alive?
Yeah.
So they have flexibility. Actually ask them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think those would be interesting questions. Like, it gets into nitty-gritty behind. But I think we do a bang-up job on it, and it seems like the job is going to be open, so.
You hear that, Bezos?
Yeah.
Let's get that going.
Come on, let's bury the hatchet. You know, this is good for you. It's good
this
for us.
This is the olive branch. Take it.
You're right.
Can we just for once not try violence here?
Yes.
Not reach for
the
bombs.
For once in our history, can we put our stockpiles of copper and animosity aside and just work together on a podcast, for God's sake?
But yeah, I try to drop book stuff not like too spoilery, but when it's needed, I don't know if it warrants a whole section of the podcast, but maybe.
Yeah.
Think about it for season four.
I think it's interesting to do that, like, you know, compare the books, like, where they're making changes, because it's just interesting information, and that's... But it's tricky, because you can't overshare, and I saw, like, in a time or two in Game of Thrones where a plot point from an earlier book is used as, like, it's kind of like a standalone kind of character thing, or they bring that character back in a way that's kind of surprising. And it are, I mean, I don't think it's ever like a show ruining spoiler, but it does get some people upset because some people have, you know, some people are spoiler phobes. Like it like just the thought of getting the show spoiled for them almost ruins, like, whether regardless or not if it actually ruined the experience, the experience of them experiencing the fact that it might be ruined, that ruins it.
Yeah.
So I don't share that thought, but I do know it exists, and I try to cater to as many listeners as we can, you know?
I think it'd be tough to do also because I haven't read, well, any of the future books yet.
Right.
But I'm probably only going to read one, maybe two, into the future. So, like, if they decide to bring something from season or from book six in to the next season, I'm not going to know about it, right?
That's another question I had for you, is if you were feeling like, because in the episode 13 podcast, I thought that there was a little bit of a wavering of your resolve to not get too far ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's from hearing people who say that book four is probably not going to be a whole season. And the book five might even not be a whole season. Like, they might really plow through this
now that they've seen how streamlined they can make it. Yeah.
And I guess, like, from how people are talking, and I haven't read it, so this can't be a spoiler, but from how people are talking, season or book four is not that consequential to the plot, or not that it's not consequential, but that it's kind of a bit of a tangent that they don't really need
that
in the story.
That seems crazy to me that you would open up all these possibilities in the next book just be like, twiddle your thumbs for a bit.
Yeah.
Which makes me think that, like, maybe whatever they set up has to be important for later on.
Maybe, yeah.
But I don't know, because, like, I also have strongly disagreed with... I honestly don't like the culture that happens with these groups where you have a fandom that's one is a show only and one is a book and plus show, because, like, I've never seen a community where the book people behave them fucking selves. And
of course,
I mentioned that, like, the Game of Thrones people eventually got under control, but after I thought about it, what really happened is the show leapt forward from the books, and now the book people were muzzled because they had nothing left that they could give. So, like, it was kind of a problem until the last two or three years I don't know how you moderate a group like that where people where people are bad faith actors that have information and yet you're encouraging people to speculate. Like, I don't know. I don't know how you do it.
All right, let's move on to AJ. AJ says, man, I really couldn't care less about Anna's inner moral quandaries. Her character's really gone downhill. How'd you feel about Anna at the end of this season?
I don't know. I liked Anna, and I thought that she was important to the plot and that she kind of helped people find their moral compasses, even people like, Claire. But I also worried because, like, I think one of the things that's unique about Amos is kind of his, like, amorality, or, like, you know, that he gave the big speech to Monica. It's like, I know you want me to be hurt and mad, but I'm not. I'm not ever going to be. Like, I'm operating on this, like, purely rational, like, self-interested plane, and it's just never. And I think that's what's interesting about Amos. And I was really leery of Anna getting in there and putting her fingers in the Amos pie because, like, you know, if Amos is just holding light, then who gives a shit? Like, if he's just, like, slightly less, he's like a paladin that might he's like a Han Solo that might shoot first, and Holden is the special edition Han Solo who might let you plug him before he is sure he'll shoot you. I don't know, but I liked her. Like, that's where I was kind of grappling with a few episodes ago. Like, I am at war between wanting to see more of her and also that would eventually destroy what makes her character kind of cool and righteous, which is that she just doesn't... She's a lot like Holden. She just won't morally compromise. She starts abandoning her family and her, you know, her outreach mission and stuff like that, then that's kind of takes away from her character.
Sure, yeah.
But no, I thought I thought it was a real moment when she spacewalked over and shocked the shit out of the Mao sister. I thought that was pretty cool.
All right, Gabe says, just a quick clarification. There have been questions on the past few podcasts about not being able to shoot, and I got a bunch of emails about this or a bunch of communiques
not
about
being able
this.
To shoot.
Yeah, in the slow zone, and then the whole travel thing. Yeah. Apparently, you can shoot in the slow zone if you are in a ship. It was a throwaway line two or three episodes ago.
The
speed limit
mentioned.
Only applies to ships and not what's in them. See, I took that line as being a theory or a hypothesis that he was working on,
too.
Not as fact, because how could he know that?
Go ahead.
So I was still under the impression that, you know, you couldn't shoot in the ships after the new speed limit, and that the old speed limit was high enough that you could fire bullets, but the new 62-mile-an-hour one obviously would not be.
Yeah.
But last episode, they proved that completely wrong because the firefight with Bobby and Amos happened.
Yeah, and
And
I bet the reason they said that is because if you think of it from a physics standpoint, all kinds of things would break down just from a basic functionality of a starship if things could only move at 38 meters per
second. Those pods that Drummer was using to move around the ship.
Yeah, exactly. That kind
wouldn't
of stuff.
Work.
Like, pumping water might not work.
Yeah.
Photons are exempt. I guess electricity would too, but there's a lot of questions that a scientist might grind if this was a phenomenon that acted outside of the ship scale. So I'm not. Yeah, I guess
it's
took
the
it
easy
same
way,
way
out. You establish a rule and then you take the easy way out. And for that, I'm a little bummed by it because I think it's interesting if you try and deal with the problems that your rules create in a smart way. But I also understand it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything was kosher in the final episode. David S. has a series of things that he wants to talk about here, and I'm considering all comers today. So he says, number one, he's glad that... I don't think you've read The Churn, have you?
Mm-mm.
Okay, then he's glad that I got to The Churn. He recently reread as well and forgot how young Amos was. And it gave a good foundation to dig into the Anna Amos stuff, which, I think had I not read The Churn, I wouldn't have really understood that quite as much. And I think it's not one of those things where you have to have read the book or the novella. But if you do, it just adds a little more context to it and a little more light. Because, I think, you know, they've done enough with Amos to let us know that he has had a rough background.
Yeah.
And as a childhood, probably
it's
not
kind
of
like
one.
Jared on Silicon Valley, where the more you hear, the more like, Jesus, dude.
Yeah. It's worse every time he opens his mouth.
Yeah.
Number two, regarding pre-season 4 reading, you might want to consider reading both books 4 and 5 and get the feeling that Cibola Byrne could be a lot like Abaddon, a half-season book. And he's not the only one to say that. A lot of people are saying.
However, Ty and Dan have said the next season is only going to be 10 episodes. That, to me, unless they just can really just cut the shit out of these books, that, to me, says that maybe we should expect more of a singular season.
Yeah.
Maybe they're a little bit more relaxed.
What if they're in the no man's zone here where they can't tell two books and one book is not enough?
I mean, that's happened to Game of Thrones on occasion. Sometimes it leads to a weaker season, and sometimes it's never been exactly fatal, but I don't know. If I was Dan and Ty, I would kind of relax and take the foot off the pedal. I mean, not to the detriment of the narrative, but now that you've got you got some money behind you, and if you read between the lines, I don't think Bezos is planning on the show being 10 times more popular to justify his investment into it. He knows exactly how popular this show is. They know how many people are watching it. Maybe they're wanting to make some modest gains, but I don't think they're wanting 10, 20 times. Maybe slow down and not have to cut as many corners. If you don't, if you're cutting corners just to adapt something from books to television, that's fine, you know. But I'd hate to see them cut stuff just for the sake of cutting it. Or because I'm afraid if we don't, we won't get to the spot in time and we'll be canceled. Because I feel like that Amazon's just going to bring this thing home.
Yeah, I have a lot of optimistic feelings about the show going forward.
Or if they don't, it's because Dan and Ty have fucked something up and made the show unwatchable, which I find very hard to believe at this point.
Yeah. He also says not including the mutiny subplot in full form is a bummer, which, as a book reader, that's why I kept looking at this and saying, man, they have no time to do the stuff that the book did. And then they just, turns out they didn't. They really didn't.
It.
They totally restructured it and cut a lot out, which I don't think actually harmed the show. I think the show was still really, really good.
Right.
It was just different.
Yeah. And it's it seems like having the Martians be massive dickheads just accelerated getting Bobby onto Rocinante.
Yeah.
Like there might have been, you know, maybe in the real books she's not in book four and she'd be absent again and there'd be some other cockamamie reason to get her on board. And they're like, you know what? We can make these guys be a bunch of high-headed idiots and who are shaming her along the way, and she can just be like, you know what, fuck it.
Mm-hmm. And she's, as he points out here, she's on the Rossi now. She's part of the Rossi crew.
Significant that her and Alex were shown paired off, because they were kind of hinting.
I mean, yeah.
They're kind of hinting towards a relationship there, and I thought it was significant. Of course, I guess they're also just Martians, right?
Right, and I do think a relationship, you know, whether it's romantic or platonic there, would be the natural thing, right? They both understand each other in a way that the other people probably don't.
What does this do to the Martians' terraforming plan? Because,
terraform Mars now?
Because Mars is... I mean, I guess it's the second best planet if you're going to look to terraform and start, like, you know, mm-hmm. and you know, maybe you can live in Cloud City and Venus or whatever, but there's not a lot of great Earth analogs. But now that you have 1,300 systems, like, fuck terraforming Mars. Just find a M-class star with the, you know, whatever inhabitable Earth-like planet, you know?
Mars is going to become the shithole of the Martian
Empire. Right, yeah. It's like if you lived in a desert and you're trying to, like, bring water to the desert and then your map updated and you found out, like, oh, there's a fucking lake with a lush meadow just, like, let's fuck this desert and go to the oasis, man.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
For sure.
I wonder if that's going to be a big plot where there'll be Martian separatists or be like, you know, let's get the hell out of here. I wonder if it's also going to be a way to, like, calm the Mormon thing all down, because that's got to be they haven't mentioned it, but if there's a legal battle over the fucking Rocinante, a Martian corvette, like, powerful connected Mormons must be having a just making the courts a shit show back on Earth trying to get that thing back.
Yeah, yeah.
But now they can just take a 6-month flight to the outer solar system and a 6-month flight to whatever home they choose, and bada bing, bada boom, there you go.
All right, Brian S. says, I know you guys have talked about attention to detail and the low gravity scenes. At WonderCon, Cass, or one of the writers, mentioned this. Fun fact, the Expanse scripts are color-coded by what type of gravity is in the scene.
Huh.
That's kind of cool.
There were some... I noticed that, like, in the last few episodes, the attention to gravity was better. Like, I liked the fact that when they shot, was it Gregory? When he shot him for, like, trying to mutiny, that he just instantly went limp and was kind of, like, floating there. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not asking for the moon. I'm just asking for, like, if you guys are color-coding the scripts, then someone, I guess it needs to go down to, like, someone on set. Like, hey, you guys, this is a fucking anti-gravity scene, and you're shooting it, you're leaning up against... it's just little stuff. Like, people in zero-G shouldn't lean on things.
Right.
They shouldn't sit on things. Mm. If they're standing still and, like, you know, under no... Like, the natural thing, it'd be like... Seeing someone with their hands, like, to their sides would be as unnatural as seeing someone walking around with their hands forward like a fucking mummy.
In gravity,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, it looks weird.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be like, what the hell's... And that's how it looks to me when I hear them clunking around in their gravity boots and they're swinging their arms as if there's some kind of conservation of angle. Maybe that would actually, yeah, you probably still swing your arms when you're walking because you are trying to... conserve angular momentum or something, but
something like that.
Yeah, but you should never fucking just have your elbows resting on a podium, or you should never like sit down to do something because it makes no fucking sense.
All right, I got a pop quiz for you.
All right,
from Jim from South Carolina. He says, I've listened to all your podcasts on the Expanse without actually watching the show. Hasn't watched the show, but listened to all of our podcasts, which is
what?
Weird. Yeah. One of the best things about listening to this is the realistic sci-fi about people actually living in other parts of the solar system. Gas giants are not suitable, so their moons would be better to support human life. With that being said, could either one of you, and I have to discount myself because I have the list right in front of me, could either one of you name the 5 largest moons in our solar system? I will cop to saying absolutely I could not. Let's see if A-Rod
the moon is one of them.
The moon is one of them.
Isn't it?
The moon is one of the biggest moons.
It is, isn't it?
You mean Earth's moon.
Yeah,
yes,
Earth's moon.
Of course.
The moon. When it says the moon, Luna.
Yes.
Then it would probably be Titan.
Titan's in there.
Okay. Ganymede, Io, Callista.
Callisto, but yes.
Callisto.
You got them all. Not in the right order, but
right.
What are you going to do?
Is Titan the biggest one?
No. Ganymede is actually the biggest.
Oh, okay.
It's 0.1,000 kilometers in diameter.
Because Earth's
bigger.
Moon is like the third largest, I think.
It's the fifth.
Is it fifth? Fuck. All right. Because it's funny because like in early season going when I was doing research on like centaurs and stuff, I actually got deep into like, so I don't think I can answer this before season three, but
right.
Clutched it.
Nice. All right. Miguel from Mexico City. Hey guys, just a quick thought. Isn't gravity used to torture belters? They all seem pretty comfortable inside their gravity generating spinning ship.
It's one third gravity though.
I thought specifically Ashford said 1G during his speech.
No, he said one third. Gregory said 1/3 G standard inner gravity, which is I think that's like.
So maybe his 1G was like 1G for belters.
I don't know. I thought they consistently said 1/3 G, which is kind of what they've established is how most ships tool around.
Sure.
And like I guess the belter ships spend more time on the float. Because they're just more comfortable doing that, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Okay. Let's move on to Tyson. Since I may be completely wrong, I'm certainly no physics expert, but the way I understand it is the only way we currently know how to create artificial gravity in space would be to have ships with spinning drums or cylinders.
Right.
Obviously, a lot
or
like...
acceleration. Like
or acceleration, yeah. Yep. I think the expanse spinning the drum should be a bit of a watershed moment for space shows and movies that want to show gravity on ships in space. So to avoid it looking kind of weird when things don't move right, if you got mag boots on, but everyone else could float like the Expanse has been struggling with, or to hand wave it away like Star Trek and Star Wars do. We're educated enough now to know how gravity works in space, at least on spaceships. It's not like the stories have to change that much. Actually, could add more material to work with. It makes sense that that's how large spaceships will be designed in the future, especially learning from the Expanse that injuries don't heal without gravity. You almost have to build ships that spin. We'll just have to get used to ships that don't look somewhat aerodynamic or like giant battleships flying through space. It's time for a paradigm shift in ship design.
I think that's what the Expanse is, because most of their ships are laid out on like the office plan, like the skyscraper plan, where it's like floors, you know, oriented along the thrust axis. So I think,
and they do
is this
some
the guy
stuff.
That hasn't seen it?
No.
Okay. Because
no, I think he's saying like Expanse does a great job of this, and they need to like this needs to be the new norm.
Okay,
for sci-fi shows.
I get with that, and I think that you do see that some like the I forget what they called the craft in like the Martian, but it was kind of built in, and if you look at some of the more hard sci-fi like you know, like Aliens, although I think they use artificial gravity, their ships look like big things that don't need to concern themselves with aerodynamics and gravity constraints. So I totally agree. Like, there's room for the Star Treks and Star Wars of the world, but I much prefer this. And yet, and I also think that they can tighten down these inconsistencies into zero G. That's just stuff that they'll learn as they continue to make these things. It's all the stuff I've pointed out, and I was actually wrong a time or two. Also, if I can point it out, would have been like an easy directorial change. It wouldn't even been special effects. It'd just been like, stop leaning on that asshole.
Right.
Don't sit on your bed before you blow your head off, asshole. Like, that's what you'd do on Earth, but we're not on Earth, are we?
Maybe that was his point.
Yeah. I'm going to go out like an earther, sitting on my bed.
Yep.
But yeah, I think it's just minor stuff. It's minor stuff.
I've got the perfect ship design in mind. Mm. It's a lot like the drum. It's a lot like the spinning drum, except... It's a human-powered hamster wheel where humans can just run in order to create their own gravity.
Right.
You don't need thrusters on the outside of the drum.
I do believe they did that in Skylab, right? Like, I think I've seen... I think I've seen a video of a late 70s, early 80s astronaut running along the perimeter. Because it would work if you can kick
off.
It would take a while to get the rhythm, but... Uh-huh. I mean, you can spin the human or spin the station. It's all the same.
I don't think you could spin a drum as big as the one that's on the Behemoth, using just human power.
Right.
But something smaller.
Well, if something big, you got a lot more humans to play with.
That's true.
I did like, it was very cool seeing the shift from going from the drum to the central core.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like there was maybe even, like, some sort of gearing system where, like, each specific spoke free spun to kind of get you to ease you into zero G,
right, and ease you out of it, probably.
Right. No, I thought that was super cool when, like, you know, drummer got weightless and made her back feel better. I bet that did feel amazing. My back's out. I'm dreaming for zero G.
All right, Brian T says, I just want to make an observation about the show versus the book. As I've begun to dive into the novels, I'm growing more amazed with the show writer's adaptation and interpretation of the source material. I started the show 3 years ago, sans book, hooked immediately by a series promo commercial that aired during Defiance, last canceled season. Going into the series without any plot perspective, I didn't realize how much of the show writers would go off book at times. Now, in retrospect, I have to, for sure, credit the writers with an expert touch of story crafting that doesn't leave you with that, man, this book, the book was way better, snarky sense of disappointment. The political interweave involving everything adversarial and Ehrenreich in season one, all show, baby. How the proto-soldier attack on Ganymede was a secret nefarious plot that got its reveal after the Earth-Mars summit. Super different from the book. He lists a couple more here. But it all worked, and it made for some fantastic television. Season three was no exception, going full throttle for 13 episodes. I, as someone who had read up to the end of this TV season of the books, I did not feel like the books ever really did anything that much better to where I was like, man, I really wish they had not gone this route with the TV show. The show always felt like it was holding its own and doing so while not being exactly the same.
And that's how I felt like the first four seasons of Game of Thrones. Like, yeah, you could say like there's additional details and there's more world building, but like, it would be, if you put all that into a show, there'd be so much exposition that it would be a worse show. And I mean, I've not read the book, so I couldn't comment on, but this is, I think I'm going to go back and rewatch season one, because I remember having a lot of problems with that first season. I remember talking on a podcast about like, yeah, I think it's a good show, but, and I wonder if like maybe if I went back and rewatched it, if I'd even feel that way. Because like
I don't know. I would say it's the most faithful to the book.
Yeah.
And
that's similar to the first season of Game of Thrones too.
Yeah, I had zero problems with the book. I don't remember how I felt about season one because I wasn't doing a podcast on it.
Right. No, that's why I definitely want to rewatch it before the season comes back. But I kind of been thinking about doing it for fun because this might be my favorite show on right now.
It's really good.
I mean, now that The Leftovers is off really and like, good. You know, like I think Better Call Saul is going to be Better Call Saul. I'm trying to think of like what is like, I like this more than where Game of Thrones is at right now.
Okay.
That's not to say I hate Game of Thrones or want to see it. You know, obviously I just wrote a book about it. But like there are definitely some holes that are opening up in the adaptation of the Game of Thrones in a way that it doesn't feel like it's happening. But then again, I would have said the exact same thing after season three of Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
But and there's a lot, you know, shit. Now that I'm thinking about it, there's two more books still. It's a lot like Game of Thrones. I just hope that the Dan and Ty can actually finish the work and see through that adaptation rather than having to be like, well, I guess we're going to do this now because fuck, we haven't finished the books.
No, Dan and Ty got this.
All right.
I got faith in him.
Cool.
Margaret, noticed most sci-fi shows use Earth time as kind of the standard. Do you think that in reality on Mars they would use the Mars day? What would a Mars day be considered on the belt? Maybe we would stick with the Earth time because it is how we evolved with our sleep cycles. Just curious because it is one aspect of the show that they haven't addressed yet.
This is interesting because I just read an article last night addressing that there's actually been some research done and that you can...
There's no such thing as time.
No, like the human like the human body will adapt up to like a 55-ish hour day.
Holy shit. I could go more. I could do 65.
If you do it slow and like you do it like there's statistics. So like I think that in Mars day is only like 37 minutes longer than Earth day. So I think it's weird because I don't know what kind of like system calendar you could use to. I mean, I guess it's nice that the biggest planets have such close like day time night cycles. But like, I wonder if they have like a leap day every calendar month where they reconcile the Earth Day to the Mars Day.
And who would have the leap day? Because there would be a vicious battle over that. Like, we're not doing a fucking leap day, and we're not shortening our calendar.
It would have
to
be. It would have to be Earth, right? Because they got the shorter day,
right?
Like the error is accumulating on our side.
That's what I mean. But it's not. It wouldn't be an error from Mars' perspective, right?
Right.
It would be like, no, this is our fucking day.
Right.
We're not going to shorten our calendar or whatever, so that you can. You know, we're not going to skip a day.
Yeah, it's so weird because
we want you guys to add a day.
Because it's already kind of confusing with time zones and what's not and in a time zone and daylight savings time. But when you get off world, it's going to be you almost need something like Star Trek's Stardate. You know, something that is based on something that like that's based on the rotation of the Milky Way galaxy or something, because the amount of times your planet spins around the axis, the amount of time your planet takes to traverse an orbit, like, all that's going to be radically different.
It would have to do with tachyons, I know that much.
Yeah.
If it has anything to do with time, it's tachyons.
Bend some tachyons, refocus them through the Heisenberg compensator, and bingo bango, one Earth day equals one Martian day.
I think it'd just be smart to decouple it from night and day. Who gives a shit? Who gives a shit?
Because that's how our bodies work.
Yeah, but our bodies change. Look at the belters.
No, I get it, but, like, you know, if you... I don't...
Let's just set a standard. Let's set a standard increment of time that is day.
Yeah.
Day, night, be damned. Who cares about that cycle?
Would it be weird, though? Like, I feel like every month, like, you know, you get up at 6 a.m. and half the time's in dark, half the time in... That would be...
Ask the Alaskans how that feels.
That's true.
I mean, fucking people do it.
That's true. You're right.
And if we're traveling space, we gotta do it.
And we...
Because what are you gonna do when we inhabit other planets? Out through the ring, the other 1,300?
Right. And Mars isn't growing shit on the surface, so it doesn't really matter. Like, there's no Martian cows that need to be milked or whatever. And if they are, they're indoors underneath artificial light. So, yeah, I guess they could...
Yeah,
for
just
now.
Get rid of the whole day-night idea.
Right.
How's that survive
the 1,300 worlds that are orbiting different stars? And
that's fine.
Still keep it 24 hours?
Yeah.
All right. You know?
Maybe give it 25.
Yeah, it's not our fault that every other planet has the wrong number of hours.
All right, let's move on to Matt H. He says, I was stoked to hear you discuss The Expanse last year on your Bald Move TV podcast, since I felt like the only one watching and enjoying the show. I was also excited to see the decision to focus a proper podcast to the show, and I feel like the decision might pay off now that Amazon is funding and promoting it. The show could be massive, since the story is so compelling. My question is, for Aaron, what's it going to take for you to pick up the books? I'm sympathetic to a desire to be surprised by the show, but the books really rule.
You've got me all wrong.
let me finish.
Okay,
and then you can set the man straight. They fill in so much of the information about which you have questions, like the birthing process in low G. Additionally, one of my favorite aspects of your Game of Thrones podcast is the spoiler and theory section. It would be cool to have one of those for The Expanse. Thanks for all you guys do. Now, set poor Matt straight.
This is purely a business decision. If this was Aaron Private Citizen, I would already have the books on my Kindle and been reading them by now, because that typically is how I approach a product that has a book component, I always hit a point where the production's not far enough along and they leave on a season cliffhanger or a movie cliffhanger, and I'm like, fuck it, I guess I have to read the series. So it's actually requiring, like, I'm always rationalizing myself, well, maybe I can just read the first three now. But I really think that it's kind of an all or nothing to bring that perspective to the podcast. And I do think it's a valuable perspective that keeps things honest. Like, you know, when Game of Thrones, and we were doing that with Jim, like, anytime, like, I'd see a blank look on Jim's face, is mostly because I was accidentally spoiling something that happened in the books or getting to a book thing. Because sometimes it gets blurred in your head, especially if it's been a few years since you've read that passage, and you're like, oh, shit, that's a... So I'm only doing it for the sake of the podcast and to keep that dynamic alive. As far as the segregated, like, spoiler versus non-spoiler, that's up to Jim, because that's a shit... I mean, I don't know if it'd be as much work on this one because, you know, Game of Thrones has, like, a unique set of lore and prophecies and, you know, like I feel like Martin really kind of wants you to figure some of this stuff out in a way that maybe Ty and Dan don't have that agenda.
I feel like I'd have to go all in on the books and just finish them.
Yeah.
Get up to date.
That's the other thing.
Which I am more than happy to do if that's the way we decide that we want to go.
It does feel like, I know there's a lot of podcasts that cover this, but it does feel like this still, at the end of season three, is kind of like this gold rush. Like, Game of Thrones is going to wrap up next year, for better or worse, and there'll be a ton of people looking for a new show. And if this continues to get the online buzz of being Game of Thrones in space, it feels like a natural evolution. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying 100 million people worldwide will watch it, but I don't know why. I really don't know why.
Yeah, I think it's as compelling as anything Game of Thrones has done.
I will say that season one of The Expanse maybe was not as compelling as season one of Game of Thrones.
Sure, yeah, that's fair.
But season two, like even season three of Game of Thrones, which we're about to start our rewatch of, like that's kind of like peak Game of Thrones, and I would say that this compares very favorably to it.
Yeah, I mean it's also a setting thing for me. Like space shows are inherently more interesting than medieval style fantasy shows,
right?
To me,
so. I also think that like it's a little bit more inclusive as an audience because there's a lot of. I know there's a lot of like women, especially, that watch Game of Thrones against their personal feelings for the material. Whereas I feel like in The Expanse, like they have projected a few hundred years of humanity and like different lifestyles and ways of expressing sexuality and individuality, like that's not the stuff that matters anymore. What matters is whether you're born in a gravity well or not, you know.
Yeah.
And right. I feel like there's this show is effortless in having that, you know, like no matter where you come from on Earth, you can probably find someone that looks, sounds, acts like you. And that's really important in a way that I don't even think Game of Thrones does exceptionally well.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Game of Thrones has a lot of stuff to wade through before you can get to any of
right,
that.
Right. And there's a whole lot built in. Well, you know, women can't be like it's the exception that females are strong characters in that world because of the way it's set up, right? Whereas The Expanse, you would expect to see very powerful women wielding authority like Ava Sarala and Drummer and even Naomi as arguably, I guess, third in command of the behemoth. Like the
third.
Well, she's the chief engineer. Like I just felt like she was always there.
Yeah, Ashford horned in, and
he's second.
He clear second. Naomi was second until Ashford showed up.
Sure, but I'm saying,
God,
you know, what I'm saying
Ashford
like
ruined everything.
Two out of the three leadership positions, behemoth are held by women. So I just feel like that's also a huge advantage that, like we've seen with Black Panther and other properties, when you start to represent those people and to make people feel like they have a place in that world, it's a lot more exciting to them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously people can engage in that material without that, but that's a huge cherry on top of the sundae. So, yeah, I think I'm glad we got into the season and I could see this being like big for Bald Move. And even if it's not, like, I think I'm all in because it's just a great show.
Yeah, it does feel like it's on a somewhat similar trajectory to Game of Thrones. Like Game of Thrones started off all political intrigue, right? With a tiny hint of some kind of fantasy element.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, aside from the setting being in space,
right,
I feel like The Expanse did a lot of that too, where the protomolecule was this thing that was just kind of out there and didn't really play a major part in the dealings of the human beings.
Right.
But then as the series has gone on, suddenly we're thrust into the what looks to be a civil war in space, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot of, like, there's so many similarities between this and Game of Thrones that would make it compare favorably. And this reminds me a lot of, like, when we started off with The Leftovers. Like, it wasn't a huge success for us, but by the end of season three, it was one of our more successful podcasts because like, it was a small audience, an even smaller engaged online podcast audience, but probably 90% of those people were listening to our podcast. And if you can, if our passion for the material kind of like shines through the way it did with The Leftovers, I've got optimistic feelings about where the show goes.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, finally, Donald says, a couple of things struck me at the end of the season and what we can look forward to in the next. Finally, we have some context for what the protomolecule wants and what the work is. with Miller hitching a ride in or on Holden. I don't know how to describe that. With Holden. How about that? The station wants to know what happened to the civilization it left behind and is using humanity as detectives. I think he nailed it. It also perhaps needs biomass to make the gate in the first place. Maybe? I don't know. Not really. It didn't seem like it needed biomass to make those new rings. Or are you just talking about the nucleus, like the jellyfish thing?
I don't know either.
Because it did sort of need something to make that.
I was trying to think if the protomolecule hit the system like a 200 million years ago. Right. Would it have like repurposed dinosaurs? Because it does need locomotion.
Yeah.
Like if it takes over a rock, there's not much it can do with that. It needs something to be able to move around. It needs to be able to hitch a ride on things. But they're playing the long game. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it might take a billion years to get there, but once you get the gate, you know, boom, it's open.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know enough about the protomolecule to say exactly what operating parameters. Do you feel like you have a better handle from the books?
No, I don't.
I mean, that's the whole thing about using an inscrutable piece of technology. Yeah. It's inscrutable.
Yeah, and you kind of want it to remain so.
Right.
Up until you don't, right?
Right. And that's the thing. So. Like, the other thing is, like, man, how much can this show expand, pun intended, before they start to contract? Because, like, you know, that's something we're starting to hear from the Game of Thrones fan base. Like, there's always these new things and new catastrophes. And, like, now it seems like the possibilities are starting to limit and everything's shaping. Well, yeah, it's coming to a conclusion. This is such a huge expansion, of the world. How do you start paring that back eventually?
Yeah.
And just, like, I mean, this feels like something you could tell, like a Simpsons 20-year kind of plot arc.
Right.
But it's going to be 9 books and probably six or seven seasons.
And I wonder if they're going to try and bring it back to sort of a personal conclusion for the characters that we know and love, or if it's going to be more of a humanity-wide kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because I think those are two very different endings. You know, those look vastly different from each other.
And I was also like, I never took it for granted because I haven't read the books that like our main crew would be the same all the way through. Like as this season drawn to close, I think I said this in the podcast. Like it wasn't entirely clear to me that like Holden and all these people would be back. Like once this thing kicks off, it might be more interesting. Like, how can a Martian corvette tooling around the solar system still be relevant in this larger world?
Right.
I don't see it, but it's exciting because I...
Yeah, I feel like it's the ways to connect, you know, the Rossi's crew to the larger picture are through Avrasarla and people like that, right?
Yeah.
The people who are already connected to the larger picture.
I mean, when I say that, I mean, it's obvious how the Rossinati will be important because it's got the investigator on board.
Sure, yeah.
But how is that important to anyone but, like, Holden and Miller and Naomi and, you know, I guess that's going to lead to the big threat and how to beat the big threat. Like, but there again, like, I guess, like, my protomolecule panic in the first seasons were, boy, I really hope they don't put away all this political intrigue to, you know, have humanity combine against the protomolecule monster, right? Mm-hmm. And they certainly didn't do that, but now, like, I guess I've got the other panic. Like, when they find this other big bad, like, I kind of hope the other big bad's just as extinct.
Yeah.
Like, it's like what happened to Tyrannosaurus? Well, ultimately, it ran out of Apatosauruses or whatever to eat. And why did they? Because of the asteroids.
Ran out of lawyers to eat.
Exactly. So. Like, they died out. So I kind of hope the big bad is dead and it's just be humanity squabbling over these 1,300 worlds. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Fuck, that's all the show needs, man.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm worried that it'll be, you know, fighting some kind of shadow war against these crazy alien ships. And
I feel like it's going to be a little of both. They've done that remarkably well so far, you know, towed that line between, or like danced on that wire between making this a political drama and making this a larger, like, alien story. And I think the mix so far has been really, really strong.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I continue worrying about, but it's not ever been a problem.
Yeah.
The protomolecule has always been you know, something that gooses along all the stuff that I actually like. And this could be yet another.
And it will be. Gooser. I mean, that single shot of Avrasara just looking at the new rings, right? That tells me so much about season four.
Yeah.
The one of the huge going concerns is going to be, what does the human race do with the new rings?
Yeah.
The new systems that they've had access to.
Yeah. And I would love to, because like, I feel like the Belters and the Martians have kind of gotten a little short shrift. We haven't spent as much time. Like, I think it's time for the Belters to shine, because I think the big conflict that's going to be interesting next season is within the Belters, the ones that, like, Ashford want to be a great nation, take a step forward, versus the ones like Dawes who want to accumulate personal power at the expense of everything else. Like, that is super interesting, and now I hope they get Jared Harris back, since he's not filming the Terror.
Yeah, they need to do something with Fred and Anderson next season.
Yeah, I'd like to see them fight over like the soul of the belt. You know, who's going to be and maybe they're just going to be forced to share power, which is also an interesting thing. Like them doing like, you know, proxy infighting, like continuing to use things like Drummer and Ashford to like fight their wars. That'd be kind of interesting.
Or maybe Drummer and Ashford are going to be the new Fred and Anderson. Like,
right?
Maybe those actors are too big at this point, and we won't see them very much.
Right.
Going forward,
I don't feel like that's.
Yeah.
You know, nothing. I don't feel like that's the case.
Straythern, I don't know how to say his name. The guy playing Ashford.
Right.
Is a pretty big actor.
He is
as far
big.
As television goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And even movie roles.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Some other stuff he's got. He says, I love how the show has been ramping up the stakes from season to season, starting with Evil Earth Corp doing experiments to the gate opening, and now humanity going to thousands of different solar systems and eventually finding the bigger enemy behind one of the gates, presumably. I'm betting the Rossi will be there to figure it out, and our favorite badass Bobby will be there to help. Except also Miller is my favorite. Ghost Miller is even better. I think I agree with that. I think Ghost Miller is better than regular Miller. And he also says they rolled the opening credits song and video for the first time in a while, which was awesome.
I noticed that, and I actually watched it, because like, I don't know why they do that. To me, that's such a great way to bring in new viewers. Like, if you've heard about The Expanse and you want to see like that, that tells so much story, like how the Earth is transformed, how Mars is transformed, how the belt is transformed, how all these things are connected together. And it's kind of like imagine Game of Thrones without, you know, the map following along all the locations, and how much harder it would be to get a feel of where you're at and where you're going. And I feel like the opening credits for The Expanse does a similar thing, where it kind of grounds you.
It does. I think, I don't know about you, but I tend to skip intros almost universally after the first few times seeing them.
Right.
So I actually appreciate that Expanse does what it does, which is give me like a 5-second clip where I don't need to go skip the intro, but then every once in a while it brings it back during important events. And
I wonder what the rhyme and reason is. It might just be like runtime.
Could be.
Like, hey, this, you know, we only got 42 minutes left of 43. Roll the long credits. Want to see the Statue of Liberty flooding and then the walls being built and then being pumped out. Yeah.
Yeah. Or it could just be a vibe kind of thing. Like, look, this is a finale. Let's bust it all out, you know?
Right, right. Yeah.
So let's bring out the good booze. to me, it emphasizes the intro more and makes me sit up and take notice when it does happen. So that's all I got.
All right. I wish we could continue to talk about it forever. I wish there was more shows out right now. I wish I wasn't committed to this fucking show watcher only role, and we could do like a book review. We could do like some book review stuff on the off season. But
let's do it. Let's do book four.
None of that's going to happen.
I'll be the devil on your shoulder.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think it's worth it? Like, I know a lot of people. I know a lot of people like that about our Game of Thrones coverage.
Yeah,
that you had both of those. And I do think that even if you don't have strong opinions either way, the behind-the-scenes shaping of the content and keeping the spoilers like very pure, like I feel like there's a lot of good things that the dynamic brings, other than just like, you know, have one person that they can freely speculate and the other guy can be smug about it. Like,
well, I think that's the most important factor. Is someone on this damn show needs to be the person who all the TV-only people can identify with,
right?
Because if not, then no speculation can happen, which really sucks. And then you're in the position of being, you might as well be an official podcast where
right.
you know everything, you have access to all the info, but you just can't say anything.
Right.
I mean, those suck.
There are ways to like do that with like listener feedback, but even then, like you gotta winnow the people that are trying to play the book game, where right. they're trying to pass off their own speculation.
Yeah,
they're trying to pass off their certain knowledge of speculation. I don't know why people do that. I don't know why people cheat in video games. I don't know why people use aimbots and Counter-Strike, but they yeah. do. And there's enough of them that make it hard to do a project like that.
It's money. Somehow yeah. it's money.
Because like the worst part would be like book only or show only. Like if you're a show only, like you just must be taking like it's impossible for both people to be show only because someone will just spoil you out of malevolence.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
So
and that's kind of why I'm considering another reason I'm considering reading them all other than I just want to.
Right. It lets you keep one step ahead of the shitbirds.
Yeah. Keep. Parody with the people who would try and ruin yeah. future events.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right.
We'll see.
So
see what season 4
we are definitely
like.
Coming back for season 4.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Look for us to be out a week. And then now I will... If Amazon drops it all at once, I'm guessing we're going to do like a Stranger Things and just like spend the whole weekend getting that shit cranked out.
Yeah.
What I really hope they do is do like maybe two, like one a week or like two or three a week so we can keep a little bit better pace with it. But I really hope mm-hmm. they don't dump it all in once.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know. I just, that's those shows that do that, it sucks because there's like 2 weeks of conversation and relevancy and then done.
Yeah.
Whereas 10 weeks, you know, that's a fifth of the calendar year. That preoccupies a lot of people's time. And if you want to grow an audience, you got to kind of do that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. Regardless, we'll have coverage when it comes out and be looking like the week before it drops for a preview podcast where we can kind of blow the dust off the series, talk about whether Jim has read the books, all that kind of stuff.
Spoiler alert, yes, I will have read the books by then.
Not all of them, though.
Oh,
maybe.
At least number four.
At least number four.
I can
four.
Tell you that for sure.
We'll talk about that kind of stuff. We might get Levi back on to give his thoughts on it. And if you this is your first experience to Bald Move, your first exposure, know that things do not stop. We're going to be doing a full podcast coverage on HBO's new Sharp Objects. Maybe supernatural, psychological thriller kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're also going to be doing a rewatch of, speaking of space, Game of Thrones season 3. And then, you know, in the fall, there'll be all kinds of stuff. Probably Better Call Saul.
Yep, September.
Maybe a new Mr. Robot.
Maybe.
Have we got that? Or that's...
I don't know the date on that.
Because
no.
I know they're playing coy on Westworld about when they're coming back with that. But we just got a lot of stuff. And movies, we're going to be covering a lot of big summer blockbusters on our movie feeds. Lots of stuff to follow at baldmove.com.